Good morning again. It is 9:16 a.m. The board has returned from executive session. The prior recording stopped at 9:08, but the board exited the meeting at 9:04. We'll do a roll call of board members and staff to make sure that all have returned, and then we will continue with the meeting as scheduled. Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Dr. King. Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
My name is Judy Chepius, and we also have Mr. Mark Harris, AAG. Okay, Dr. Bustillo, the meeting is yours.
Thank you. Mr. Barassa, the board is now going to be deliberating on the evidence that we have and working towards taking action here. I'll go ahead and get us going here. I really feel that we need to be able to have Mr. Barassa show us competence in the field of physical therapy that he has not been practicing for the past 13 years, and there's a number of ways to do that. I think one is certainly to fulfill that 140 hours of continuing education and consideration of passing the MPTE. So I'd like to hear from others.
Yeah, I'd be in total agreement with that. Depending on what type of clinic it is that he's going to be going into, I think it'd be great to have a certain number of courses within that realm. If it's an orthopedic clinic, but he's also going to be working with neurological patients, I'd like to see kind of a mix of orthopedics and neurological continuing education courses, be taken. With him being out of the field for 13 years, I think definitely some documentation courses would be in order as well, just to ensure compliance with, what that needs to look like. I would be in total agreement with just getting the continuing education hours, or if he chooses to go the route of the MPTE, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of studying that goes along with him retaking that. But one of those options, I think, definitely should be on the table.
I'm going to lean more towards the board exam in terms of the options for him. 140 hours is to be done in terms of content. But I feel like 13 years out of practice, as well as having a stroke, I need to be able to know that he's capable of processing what's going on and be able to comprehend and interact with patients. So I think the exam would be preferred for as opposed to the 140 hours.
Any thoughts, Mr. Barton or Mr. Greer?
So I agree. I think I'd like to see some continuing competency. I'd like to see an exam just confirming that he has some kind of, the ability to do this. I mean, I think I see, a lot of strength and a lot of willpower in being here, and I'm grateful for that. But I think those things would be helpful for our assessment as to whether he's safe to practice and what is a physically demanding career. My inclination at this point would be to give Mr. Barassa a chance to go get that information and frankly just to table this motion until that happens. That would be kind of my inclination. I don't know where other members of the boards are, but I think we could give him some pretty direct instruction about what we are looking for and what we hope to see, and then table the motion and give him a chance to come back here maybe in June or July with that information so that we can then make an assessment.
I tend to agree with Mr. Barton. I see it. We have two choices. We can either deny or we can table to give more time. I don't see how we can grant a license on this record. I think we need to see something that shows that the applicant is qualified to practice. I have some concerns of his ability to physically do the job. I understand he has performed, recovered from his stroke incredibly well, but I'd like to see, his doctor provide a letter stating that he is physically able to do the role.
Yeah. I think a combination of ideas here would be probably in his best interest moving forward and the professions to ensure his safety as well as the safety of the public. I feel like he is going to need some level of continuing education to even be able to take and pass the MPTE. As the profession has changed quite a bit over the last 13 years. I'm happy to provide that direction. As Mr. Leone has pointed out, there's a number of things that we can do to maybe assist that process, but I do feel his passing the examination is important. And to your point, Mr. Greer, I do think a medical evaluation is probably helpful as well. Anybody like to entertain a motion?
I was trying to formulate a motion, but in order to do so, I'd like to be able to speak competently about the level and amount of CEUs we'd like to see. And frankly, I defer to my professional members on that a lot because I just don't know what number is helpful. Are there any thoughts on that, on what number of CEUs? I think, 140 would be a lot. And with 140, he could just come in here and ask to be admitted. Which is obviously an option, but short of that, I'm curious what the professional members of the board think on what level of CEUs might be enough to get him up to date for what's happened in the last decade, and give him an opportunity to either come here and ask for a supervised practice period or kind of start that process.
I guess that was my thought with offering both as options to him and letting him decide which option he wanted to proceed with. Taking the exam, he's going to have to likely, as Dr. Bustillo mentioned, take some sort of continuing education to kind of get caught up on, what's going on within physical therapy now, as well as probably going through, various, testing study guides and things of that nature. Or if he takes 140 continuing education hours, he's going to get that full understanding, depending on what courses we lay out for him, on what's going on within the field now. So that's kind of why I was giving both as options. I'm totally fine with if we want to say that he has to retake the MPTE. I just think if we're doing that, it's going to be hard to also assign a specific number of con ed hours because again, studying for the MPTE is a long process in itself. So giving a required number of con ed hours plus the additional studying that he's going to have to do just to pass that exam, I think that would probably be too much.
What are your thoughts, Mr. Leone, on something like saying, obviously we wouldn't be able to order it, but tabling the motion with instructions to go get somewhere between like 40 and 60 CEU hours, a medical exam, and come back with a plan for a supervised practice period?
I would be in agreement with that as well. I have no problem with that being a third option here. Again, I just think that we need to outline what type of continuing education then that he wouldn't be required to take. I think the documentation and the coding is a definite that has to be in there. But then depending on what type of practice, I believe his name was Thad, that he was mentioning in the clinic that he might be working at. Depending on what type of practice that is, I think that would base what the con ed that he's going to take is going to be.
Do you think 40 hours would be enough, or should we point to 60?
I would be more leaning towards 60. I just think, as Dr. Bustillo mentioned, a lot has changed over 13 years.
Yeah. Do you think 60 is enough?
I think it's going to take more than that to have the... There's every aspect of the practice is tested on the MPTE, whether it's orthopedics and neurologic and pediatrics and wound care and oncology and all of the subspecialties to varying levels. And so there really is a fairly comprehensive level of coursework that's going to need to be completed for him to have a chance to be successful. So I can live with 100. I don't think 60 is going to be enough, especially when we add in the documentation and coding and, you know, even supervision, because then eventually he has to pass the AZ law exam.
Got it. Dr. Hike, any thoughts?
I'm still leaning towards the exam myself. I think one option, I don't know if this is possible, but they have the Pete exam. I don't know if that's possible that he could, you know, study in terms of the prep course to prepare for the NPTE. The Pete is highly correlated with the success on the NPTE. So, you know, if that's an agreement, then to show that he's done well on that test, the cutoff, I think, is 600. So in terms of him taking the PEAT and having a score of 600, you could demonstrate that. I would feel a lot better about going forward.
So just by requiring the MPTE, we put the onus on him to get the required training to be able to take the test.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me try my hand at a motion then, which may be dangerous, but if we need amendments, let me know. What I would do is I would move that we table the motion for now, with instructions to Mr. Barrasso to provide us evidence of competency to practice in physical therapy and then reapproach the board by way of instruction. It appears that the board believes that that is going to require something around or north of 100 hours of continuing education and or passing the MPTE and probably a note from a physician saying that he's safe to practice physically. And with those instructions, I would move that we table the motion.
The only thing that I would change in that is unless he's coming back to get an interim permit, I think the 100 hours is irrelevant. I think it's either, if it's not going to be on interim permit, I think it's either MPTE or 140 hours. Cause that's not something we would change for anybody else. This has nothing to do with Dr. Barras's condition or anything. This is just what state law says needs to be done when you've been out of practice that long.
Yeah, no, well spoken. That was missed in my motion. So with that amendment, that would be my motion then. So table with those instructions.
I'll second that motion.
Any further discussion? So we're looking at the MPTE and a medical evaluation.
Yes.
Okay.
Or at his choice, 140 hours or 100 hours in a request for a supervised practice period, his choice. I think of the three options we suggested might work.
All
Okay, so just to clarify, what we're talking about here is providing him with the option to either take the NPTE to complete 140 hours or the 100 hour, well, a medical evaluation. I'm confused where the 100 hours leads into the 140 hours or
so,
breaks the other.
I think what we're suggesting is by way of instructions, we see three options moving forward. Either 100 hours in the supervised practice period, 140 hours, or a taking and passing the NPTE. And I think either one of those, we'd like to see a letter from a physician stating he's safe to practice.
Okay, and so completing the 100 hours, I'm assuming, maybe this is an incorrect assumption on my part, but I'm assuming he would have to return to the board with evidence of completing that before the board would even consider the
supervised
clinical practice period. Okay.
I would like to thank the board, and I will try, not try, I will follow through with your directions. Thank you very much, and I'll see you in a few months after I get my, I complete the option.
We still have to vote on Dr. Barasta, so it's not done yet.
Oh, I know.
We still got to vote, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so is that the motion, and is there any further discussion on it?
Judy, would it be okay if you reread it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm crossing my fingers that it's accurate. So.
Sorry.
The motion on the table is to table Mr. Barasa's application for licensure as a physical therapist, and suggest that he return to the board with further proof of competence before it is considered further. That further proof includes a medical examination and documentation ensuring his fitness to practice, with the additional following options to demonstrate competence: successful completion of the NPTE exam, completion of 140 hours of continuing competence, covering the period of lapsed license, or complete 100 hours and return to the board for further evaluation of the credit and potentially to seek then a supervised period of clinical practice. The instructions with respect to the suggested continuing education includes documentation, supervision, and coding and billing, along with coursework in the type of practice that is specific to the setting in which he hopes to return to.
That sounds perfect.
Good job.
You want me to repeat it, don't you?
Well done.
That was a great capture.
Okay. So we do have a first and a second on this motion. So, to be complete, bear with me just one second while I get some notes here. Okay. So it's been moved and seconded to table Mr. Barasa's application for licensure as a physical therapist until after the time he can return to the board with demonstration of competence to practice, which will include evidence of a medical examination, ensuring his fitness to practice, and at least one of the following options: successful completion of the NPTE exam, completion of the 140 hours that would cover the lapse of licensure, the lapse of education over the lapsed license, or completing 100 hours of continuing competence and returning to the board for further evaluation of that credit and potentially seek a supervised period of clinical practice. The board's recommendation for continuing competence includes, but is not limited to, documentation, supervision, and coding and billing, as well as continuing education in the type of practice that is evidenced by the setting that he hopes to return to.
I think you got it.
Okay. Dr. Vecchio.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes. Mr. Barassa, the board staff will be in contact with you. We will have this motion, all of these particulars written out for you to follow. And that may take the rest of this week to accomplish.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck to you, Mr. Barassa.
Thank you for the board meeting. And I will do the best that I can to complete those. And I thank the board.
You're welcome. So, Judy, can we do the consent agenda, or do we need to go straight to the formal hearing?
You have the formal hearing cannot be heard before 9 o'clock, but it can be heard after 9 o'clock. So if you want to proceed with the consent agenda, you can certainly do that.
All right. So let's look at the consent agenda, which includes Maribel Goudat, Jacob Osment, Brandon Richard Jr., Stephanie Whitmer, and Noah Abrahams. Is there anyone that you'd like to pull from the consent agenda?
This is Mr. Barton. I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda, items 5A and 5C. Dr. Vecchio?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. For all of those individuals whose names were called by Dr. Vecchio, you are more than welcome to remain on the call if you wish to listen in. You are not obligated at all to do so. That was Maribel Goudat, Jacob Osment, Brandon Richard Jr., Stephanie Whitmer, and Noah Abrahams. Thank you. Right. Dr. Vecchio, is it your intention now to move forward to the administrative hearing?
Yes.
Okay. I will, I believe the time is appropriate now to upload the exhibits to the file. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Board members, please bear with me just a moment. Board members, the exhibit list in this case has now been added to your consolidated drive in the file titled 6A for Georgia Holguin. And at this time, Dr. Bustillo, I believe you're ready to move forward. We should make sure that Elizabeth Campbell is on the call. I think I saw her join earlier, but just verify that she's on here. And she is.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Board members, Ms. Campbell will be your independent advisor in this case, as Mr. Harris will be presenting the state's case in this matter.
Is Ms. Holborn present?
Good morning, yes, I am.
Okay. All right, I have a script that we need to read, and we'll go through it. This is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with Georgia Holgren, PTA, case number 2405, is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there have been violations of the board's statutes, rules, and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Board members present for this hearing do you want to do roll call or do you want us to do it?
I'll go ahead and do roll call that way. Dr. Bustillo, just identify yourself, your position on the board, and your attendance.
Karen Bustillo, professional member, chair.
Dr. King, I believe, is absent. Mr. Leone?
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Mr. Greer?
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton?
Joshua Barton, public member.
Dr. Hike?
John Hike, professional member.
Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing, the respondent's answer, all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves? First, the state.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Mark Harris on behalf of the state.
And Ms. Holgren.
Yes, I'm here.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Ms. Holkin, good morning and welcome. Not to throw everybody a curveball, but this is the first that we've heard from Ms. Holkin, and I'm not sure. One of the reasons why the board remanded this to formal hearing was because Ms. Holkin did not appear before the board or respond to the board. The state is prepared to certainly, you know, move forward with the administrative hearing. However, just by way of quick reminder, the board had its initial review of this case in June, and it was brought to the board's attention because she had her fingerprint clearance card suspended because of a domestic relations issue. She eventually pled. Because she didn't appear, or partly because she didn't appear at the initial review, you remanded this to an informal. That was scheduled, I believe, for the August meeting. She didn't attend that, and as a result of her failure to attend, you remanded this to formal hearing, I think in part to try to get her attention. And so now that she's here and participating, I just didn't know what you wanted to do. I think this can probably be resolved via consent agreement or something, but again, the state is prepared to go forward with the administrative hearing. The facts aren't in dispute, and you may want to, before we go too far down the formal hearing route, you may want to just, you know, ask to hear if Ms. Holkin has any thoughts on how she'd like this morning to go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Ms. Holgren, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, members, but just remember at this point she's not under oath, so you're just having a conversation with her.
Should we go under oath?
You know, I'll defer to you. I also know that Beth Campbell's on, you know, available if you have any questions, but I think for purposes of right now, we just want to see, you know, perhaps
where she is and what she'd like to do going forward here. And that's just a suggestion.
Sure. Ms. Holgren, can you just tell us what's been happening over the past 6 months and why you haven't been in touch with the board and what it took for you to come to this meeting?
So I was under the impression when I read the email that I didn't have to be present. So, and I've never had to do this. I guess I wasn't sure. So when I read it, it just said that I didn't have to be present. So I just assumed that you guys were going to make a decision. And, I was really busy working like 13, 10 hours a day. But then I know I read in the letters with the formal hearing, you had to be present. So that's why I'm here today.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, if you think it's helpful, if we just go forward with the administrative hearing and I just, you know, put the case on, you hear from Ms. Holcomb and you just make a decision, you know, that's fine as well. It's just kind of a unique, you know, situation. Typically in these situations, the licensee doesn't show.
Right.
So, Dr. Bustillo, as Mr. Harris has stated, I think that the board kind of has two options at this point. One is to move forward with the formal hearing and at the conclusion of the formal hearing to go ahead and issue an order. The other thing would be to continue this formal hearing matter until the board's next meeting in order to allow Mr. Harris and Ms. Holquin to negotiate a proposed consent agreement to bring back to the board if the board members think that that would be a more fruitful and efficient use of the board's time.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. How does the board feel about that option?
This is Mr. Barton. I'm inclined to do it if Mr. Harris and Mr. Holcomb believe they can come to some kind of an agreement. If we don't think there's a chance at that, then I'm inclined to just get it done today. But that would be my perspective.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, I'd be more than happy to reach out to Ms. Holcomb. I would just need some assurances that, you know, she'll be responsive. And I would just, you know, I'd like to hear from her on what her thoughts are and how she would like to proceed.
So that would be my only concern, is it's been this difficult to get Ms. Holcomb on a call or anything. So I'm more inclined to just take care of it now. And she's here. We have the ability to do it.
And that's my concern as well. Mr. Leone, I mean, I don't want to spend the time doing a formal hearing if we are, if we can resolve it through negotiations outside. I am concerned about, the fact that it took a formal hearing to get Ms. Holcomb here. And frankly, if we were to allow her the opportunity to negotiate a consent agreement, which, you know, in my mind is a essentially giving her a reprieve, my take would be that if that doesn't work out because she's not responsive, I would not be feeling very charitable, to put it mildly, if we were back here at another formal hearing.
Okay,
I would see what Ms. Holcomb wants to do. If she's here, she's taking time to be here. If she wants to try to work this out with Mr. Harris, I would allow her to do that. If she wants to go forward today, the state's ready to go forward today. I'm assuming she's ready to go forward today. Yeah, that's kind of where I would be.
So, Ms. Holcomb, you've heard this discussion. Would you like the opportunity to come up with a consent agreement with our with Mr. Harris, or do you want to go forward with the formal hearing today?
Can you explain to me what they both are, like what the difference is? I have no problem getting hold of them if I need to, or I just was under the impression I didn't have to in the last meeting. But.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, members of the board, you can either ask Ms. Campbell, or I'd be happy to respond to, I'll defer to who you'd like to respond to Ms. Holcomb's question.
I think either or, yeah. As long as she gets the information that she needs.
But
Ms. Campbell, can you answer the question for Ms. Holcomb?
Yes. A formal hearing involves presentation of evidence both by the respondent, Ms. Holcomb, and by the Assistant Attorney General, Mark Harris, after which the board will make findings, fact, conclusions of law, and issue an order based upon its findings, fact, and conclusions of law, likely, I'll just leave it at that. The second option is for a consent agreement. A consent agreement is a settlement agreement. This would allow Ms. Holcomb to negotiate the facts and the conclusions of law as determined by the board or as set forth in the consent agreement, and also to negotiate a proposed form of discipline. Any consent agreement would, of course, be subject to review and approval by the board.
Okay. I'm okay with doing the consent.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb, this is Mark Harris. If the board agrees to continue this to the next meeting to give you and I an opportunity to try to reach a consent agreement that we would then collectively present to the board at its February meeting. I just ask that you be responsive when I reach out to you. I will get your contact information from the board's investigator as well as the board's executive director. It's highly likely that I will include them in those discussions, but I just, I will do everything that I can to reach you at a time that's convenient to you, but I do need you to, make yourself available for those conversations.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, if everybody's okay, perhaps something that you could consider is just continuing this to your February meeting with the direction to the parties to try to come to a an agreement that we can present to you for your consideration at that meeting in February.
Okay, thank you. So I'll move that we continue this case to February to allow Ms. Holcomb and Mr. Harris an opportunity to come up with a consent agreement.
Well, second.
Any further discussion?
Was that Mr. Barton that seconded it?
It was, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to continue the formal hearing in case 2405, Georgia Holguin, PTA, to allow an opportunity for a consent agreement to be drafted and presented to the board at its February meeting. Dr. Basile?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Ms. Holcomb, I'll be in touch.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are no informal hearings or rehearing scheduled, which brings us to item 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters for review, consideration, and action. And I do have a script to read before for these. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 3 cases of initial review and 5 preliminary reviews for the board to consider. The matters will be heard pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
John Hike, professional member.
For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all of the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time and place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to another agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. And our first case is case 2417, Laura Crow, PT.
I see Ms. Crow is present, and I believe she's represented by Libby Peterson, who...
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Hi. Good morning. And the complaint was filed by patient RT, and I'm not sure that RT is present in our meeting. Good morning, RT. We're going to continue to use your initials. So this complaint was filed by RT. He alleged that Ms. Crow falsely documented his functional status in the clinical record, which caused him to be discharged early to an unsafe level of care following his spinal surgery. RT underwent elective cervical spinal surgery on November 30th of 2022 at a hospital in Tucson. His home residence was out of state. RT had a complicated post-operative course that required an extended stay in the acute care setting, where he continued to receive PT, OT, and speech services following his surgery. Dr. Crow evaluated and treated RT on 12/18/2022, which was 18 days following his surgery. She documented in the notes the patient ambulated 150 feet with modified independence with a front wheeled walker. He had met the goals of the plan of care, and she discharged the patient from acute care services. She recommended the patient be discharged home with a walker. Based on the documentation reviewed, the patient's functional status continued to improve until his discharge from the acute care stay, to the point where it is documented that he was independently ambulating around the nursing unit with his walker. RT was discharged to a hotel room on 12/22/2022 with outpatient physical therapy ordered. On 12/23/2022, a day later, RT was transported back to the same hospital emergency department following a reported fall and an inability to perform activities of daily living. PT and OT were reevaluated at the time, and they recommended the patient be discharged to a skilled nursing facility due to weakness of right upper and lower extremity and an inability to be safely discharged to a home setting. He was readmitted to acute care and then discharged to a skilled nursing facility on 12/26/22. Dr. Crow and her attorney received a copy of the investigative report and acknowledged receipt that they'd reviewed it, but they didn't provide a supplemental written response. And at the time the complaint was received, the board staff identified the following possible statute violations that may apply: ARS 32-344-4, engaging in the performance of substandard care by physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether the actual injury to the patient is established, and ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession as it relates to Principle 4, a physical therapist shall exercise sound professional judgment. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. RT, do you have any additional information that you have not previously provided to be able to share with us?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Well, I do have my medical file that the Arizona Attorney General helped me get from the hospital, over 2,000 pages. It is well documented. I've seen the Japanese lady from Japan, from Tokyo, twice. I seen an occupational therapist twice at a speech therapist before Ms. Crow even entered into the picture. And they said,
right, we have that information.
You do have that.
Do
we have the original orders written December 15th by Carol, the nurse for Dr. Hubert at his office, that I was to stay through the holidays because both my attendings, Dr. Hubert and Dr. Gilmartin, was out of state. Well, Hubert had left, Gilmartin was getting ready. If you look at the timeline in the file, within an hour after Ms. Crow wrote her questionable report, because we got six reports saying she's wrong and they're in the file, Dr. Jossi or somebody rewrote the orders. I know they did. You can print it, see what they did. They just scanned it through a computer and changed the date and read the wording around. I have shown this to Dr. Hubert and to Dr. Gilmartin and to Carol, and they are in total shock what I went through. But, you know, we discussed it. I survived it. I made a full recovery, and we put it behind us until March of last year, when I simply called to get an appointment in the urology department because I got prostate cancer. I was made the appointment, but then the next day, because I talked loud because of my deafness, the appointment was canceled. So I took it to the doctor who's over all the clinics, and she said, no, we can't do that. That's discrimination. You'll be getting a phone call. You're getting your appointment back. Yeah, I got two calls from risk management yelling, screaming, and cussing me out. And I'm like, I get a call from their attorney as well, a young lady. So I'm like, okay, whatever. But then they kicked me out of the hospital, and they used Ms. Crow's report and what allegedly went on that never went on, never happened in the hospital, to ban me. And this is when I filed with the Department of Justice, your board, three other state boards, the Attorney General's Office for Arizona, Ms. Garcia, and United Healthcare. They're investigating this because they're seeing it. I mean, the fingerprints are all over the file. If you're going to do something, bro, you don't write it out and put it in somebody's file, name names, times, and places. But if you look, within an hour after Ms. Crow's report, Jossie or somebody rewrote the orders. They was never to be rewritten. Miss Carroll has sent me a copy to my hospital room. Now she's claiming, Miss Grove, that I walked 100 and some odd feet. No, ma'am. I was taking that oxy whatever pain medicine. I was on extra strength Tylenol and methylrelaxant. I was sleeping 22 to 23 hours a day. I had reacted to the medicine and my tongue was as big as your fist. I couldn't breathe and I couldn't eat. So I'm on oxygen and IVs. Yeah. That's what really happened.
Okay. We have all of the, we do have all of the medical records.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
but
ma'am.
Thank you for your,
All I want out of this is for Miss Crow to come clean on who the hell was the mastermind behind this. Who come up with this sick little idea?
Okay.
And
okay.
She's off the hook real fast. I want the person behind it and I want my doctors back. I've been left here with no doctors. I got COPD. I can't get my inhalers. I'm fighting prostate cancer, but I don't have a urologist. And everything stems around her report. Now, how does she come up with that when you got four reports before her? And then when I went to the ER, I seen a physical therapist, an occupational resident, the doctor who, along with Dr. Hubert, runs the whole neurosurgery spine department. I don't know. I seen a neurosurgery resident. There's a whole list in there, you know. Nurse practitioner.
Okay, let's look at what we're here for.
The hospital. It was an error. And I never got the walker she prescribed. I had no way to get it back. And I couldn't fly back to Missouri anyway at that time because Missouri had got a blizzard and the airports were shut down. So I was hung in Arizona. But when I came back to the hospital, it was because I was laying in that hospital, hotel room bed, pardon me. I needed my oxygen. I needed back on the IVs. I was sick as a dog and I couldn't even move. Thank God the people at the hotel unlocked the door and let the paramedics in. And I was held from the 23rd to the 26th in the ER. And then a very sweet lady, I don't remember her name, she's a social worker, got me into the Catalina rehab, which is like 4 or 5 blocks down the street from the hospital. I was flat on my back there 3 or 4 days before they even started physical therapy. And they even agree. Dr. Singh, who at that point in time was... He covered the emergency room at the hospital, but he also took care of the patients down at the rehab place. He's like, yeah, you never should have been dismissed. You do need, and even the people there, the physical therapist at the rehab place said, yeah, you need intensive therapy.
Okay.
So I think we got enough physical therapists questioning Ms. Crow. I mean, 8 people, 9 people wrong and she's right. I mean, you know.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Peterson, do you or Dr. Crow have an opening statement?
Dr. Crow would like to make a statement first, and then I'll do some wrap-up as necessary. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And sorry, I apologize. I'm recovering from the flu, so if I'm sniffly, I apologize. But I'm Laura Crow, and thank you for this opportunity to address the board. I do disagree with the allegations that are falsely documented of a patient's functional mobility. The investigative report did conclude that the written statement and medical record review do not support these allegations. RT, the patient, underwent cervical spinal surgery on 11/30/2022 at Banner University Medical Center in Tucson, Arizona. While the providers initially recommended inpatient rehab, RT stayed in the hospital long beyond a usual admission and was able to progress in the hospital setting. The patient progressed well, documented by multiple providers. I was asked to reassess RT on December 18th of 2022, almost 3 weeks after his initial surgery. I provided an objective assessment of RT's level of functioning. The patient no longer objectively qualified for inpatient rehab. Multiple physicians, nursing staff, and occupational therapists also documented RT's ability to ambulate independently with a front-wheeled walker and perform his activities of daily living on multiple occasions towards the end of his admission. And thus, the physicians ordered his discharge with outpatient PT services. I respectfully request the board to please dismiss the complaint against me. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Peterson? The only thing I would like to add that is that we obviously refute that Dr. Crow is in any way a mastermind or had any agenda against his patient. She had not met him before. She was asked to do her independent assessment following her own ethical standards. It was a very objective assessment that was corroborated by multiple other providers. And more importantly, when the patient came back into the hospital after being discharged days later to a hotel, he had reported he had fallen. He had refused to cooperate at even trying to stand. And because of that ability to even assess him, it was determined that he would go into inpatient rehabilitation post that fall. That is a different scenario when Dr. Crowe evaluated the patient days earlier on the 18th and did her objective assessment. And I do believe that this case is inappropriate for discharge. Thank you.
Dr. Crowe, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Can I say something?
We'll come back, I promise.
Thank you, ma'am.
I have a couple of questions. So Dr. Crowe, I've not worked in acute rehab or anything like that. So if you can just kind of explain the process of how it works when a patient gets discharged, is your writing the recommendation in your note what actually discharges the patient, or does the physician actually make the final call on that?
That's a great question. So yeah, as a physical therapist or occupational therapist, our assessment goes towards the whole big picture, but ultimately it's the physician that does do the discharge.
Okay. And then my other question is, I heard you mention that the patient didn't qualify for inpatient rehab. Is that something that you take into consideration as a therapist because of insurance benefits or however that process works? Or is your assessment of the patient purely based on what you're seeing with the patient, not necessarily that he won't be covered by his insurance?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So again, we go each and every time we go assess and work with a patient, we determine their functional mobility, and he was completely independent. And so that does not warrant going to an inpatient rehab facility. And I would actually be doing, that would be fraudulent to say that he still needed an inpatient rehab setting.
Okay. Thank you.
And I also have another question as a follow-up. I think the OT evaluated RT as well, and the OT discharged the patient as well, saying that they didn't recommend any further treatment.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Crowe or RT?
No, but I have a statement.
I have a question for RT. RT, so you mentioned that Dr. Crowe is the one who made the decision to discharge you from the hospital. But what, from my understanding within the information and the documents that we've gotten and also hearing Dr. Crowe's statement, it's actually the physician that discharges you from care from the hospital. Is that something that the physician is denying to you when you talk to the physician, or where are you getting your side of the story from?
From the medical records, over 2,000 pages, from talking to Dr. Hubert and Gil Martin in person. They were the attending. Dr. Jossie, a resident, did not have the authority to release me. Now, Ms. Crowe makes the statement she was requested, or there was an order written having you do that for her to do an evaluation. There's not one order from a doctor in this file that she's to come and see me. It was a registered nurse who does not have that authority to request a patient be evaluated. There's nothing from my doctor. When my doctors got back, Hubert went to South Carolina and Gil Martin went to California. But let me tell you about December 21st at 7 a.m. I had been.
Well, we're talking about your discharge on the 18th.
On Wednesday the 24th of December, 4 Northeast, 7 in the morning, a woman come through the double doors. She walks by my room, she backs up, she comes in. Mr. Thomas, Dr. Gil Martin. Mr. Thomas, how long have you been here? Well, Monday night at 10:30. Well, we've been trying to find you for 2 days, and we couldn't find you. I said, well, they tell me I'm in the computer. No, you're not in the computer. Ding, ding, I've been hit by these young people. from my own doctors.
So what does this have to do with Dr. Crow?
Because she wrote...
Dr. Crow would not be the person who's putting you into
the system. The nurse who cannot order somebody to be evaluated did. Crow did the evaluation.
No, Dr. I'm talking Yossi, about your statement regarding not being in the system. What does that have to do with Dr. Crow?
Because based on what she wrote, I got moved to 4 Northeast, which is where you're at when you're going to get dismissed. She never evaluated me. You know what she did in the room that day? It was obvious. I'm paralyzed from the waist down. I just had pain. Spine surgery. I had no use of my legs. I could not use my right arm and hand. I still can't use my fingers and thumb too well sometimes.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to find the connection. I was trying to find the connection.
I'm going to tell you. All Miss Crow told me, all she told me in the room that day, well, tell me how you got from Missouri to Tucson, Arizona. So I told her how it happened. Well, I'm going to write it up that you're okay to go home. I said, ma'am, I can't stand and walk. I got no use of my legs or my hand and my right arm. Dr. Hubert already had written the orders. I showed her the orders, which I have right here. Carol sent them over to me on Thursday the 15th. I was remained through the holidays until they got back.
Okay, yeah. So let's go back to that.
There's no way from the 15th, sir, there's no way from the 15th through the 18th, I made this miraculous recovery.
Okay, so let's go back to that specific day then where she reassessed. Excuse me. I'm trying to ask you questions here. So let's go back to that specific day where she did the reassessment on you. Can you,
so
you
said she asked one question, that was it.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask more. So when she came in to do the reassessment on you, you said she asked you the questions about how you got from Missouri to Tucson.
Yes.
Did she do any other assessment with you? Did she ask you to get up and walk with a walker?
Nope.
Did she ask you to,
nope,
to perform any other things? Did she do any testing on you or anything,
nope,
like that?
I'm on oxygen and IV. I can't swallow. I can't breathe. Yeah.
So
I'm in a hell of a shape. I'm sleeping 23 hours a day.
How long was she in the room with you for?
Oh, I'm going to say 5-10 minutes maybe. Just talking.
5-10 minutes. Okay, so in that 5-10 minutes, can you tell me specifically what was done within that 5-10 minutes?
She sat there and she said, tell me how you got to Arizona from Missouri. So I told her a whole long story. That my insurance at the time, Humana, got me in with Dr. Hubert.
Okay.
He was on there to listen.
Okay.
There's not a doctor in Missouri. The doctor, one doctor in Missouri that would have done the surgery. He was at the University of Missouri, left staff. So I called Humana because they have a long list of providers. And I happened to get a lady in Tucson. And she said, well, we got Banner Health University. They're excellent. And she got me in with Dr. Hubert.
Okay.
But I talked to Dr. Hubert and Dr. Gil Martin January the 5th, face-to-face, and again in May of 2023. They apologized for the way I got treated in the hospital. You never should have been done the way you've done. You never should have been dismissed. But we agreed to put it behind us because I survived it. I lived through it. I got the rehab down at Catalina, which are wonderful. And we're just going to put it behind us. And it'd be behind us right now if the hospital in March of last year hadn't drug it out and tried to use it against me and cost me all my doctors. And I've read every page of this. No doctor wrote the order asking Ms. Crow to come in. It was a resident nurse, and that is not legal. I've already talked to the Board of Nursing. That nurse did not have the authority to ask Ms. Crow to come in. Jossie never did anything. Jossie could not legally dismiss me unless he talked with Gil Martin and Hubert, the attendings. He's only a resident. Nobody talked to Gil Martin and Hubert. Nobody.
The record, the discharge in orders are very clear. It was Dr. Hubert who did it. There was an original order by Dr. Jossie.
He was out of state. And he's already said he never signed a damn thing to dismiss me. He couldn't have. He was in South Carolina. And Gil Martin was in California.
Dr. Batista, members of the board, this is Mark Harris. If I could just ask the board members if they have any more questions of either Ms. Crow or the complainant. And if not, perhaps we can go into deliberations and just focus on what is the appropriate thing, if anything, to do.
It's called Dr. John Roberts.
The only other question I have would be, again, for Dr. Crow. So I asked RT the question, during the time where you walked into the room to do the reassessment with him, what was his impression of what happened. If you can share the same information from the moment you walked into the room to perform the reassessment, can you give us a detail of what was done with him during that time and how long you were in there for?
Yeah. If you refer back to the medical records, my note is impeccable. But when I walked in, he was in bed. He got out of bed independently. He got up. Again, he had no oxygen, no O2. Perhaps when he was, you know, post-op, like right out of post-op, he might be remembering that. When my session, he had no O2, no IV. So I helped him, you know, he walked independently with a walker down the hallway.
This doesn't lie. This doesn't lie. I was on oxygen and IV, and so I was just...
So I walked him actually the hallway to the stairs. He climbed the stairs, about three steps. They're just like a mock stair, if you will. Walked back to his room. I explained to him that, he should be excited that he actually is modified independent and now can go home and does not require like IPR. And so that's when he, proceeded to become upset. I tried to again continue to, rationalize my decision, and from my expertise.
That did not take place. She is making this up.
He, again, proceeded to, become more upset. It was a situation that it was just circular talking at that point. And so I thought it's better just, to, you know, have him calm down and leave the room. I put his bed alarm on because I had a feeling that he might get up. We also were on the neuro floor.
I couldn't get up. I had no use in my legs. I was paralyzed.
So we usually put bed alarms on most people there. So I proceeded to, leave him in his bed alarm on. I walked down to the nursing station. The nursing station on that unit is open. It's a newer model, and so it's open. And his nurse was also at the nursing station. I was starting to document when he got out of bed by himself, walked down the hall with the walker, and again started to...
RT, we need you to be quiet while we're asking questions.
He's continued to yell at me, and at that point, I was best to de-escalate the situation, so I actually left the floor, and his nurse proceeded to help him get back into his room.
I never got out of my room.
To answer the question for length of time, I don't know exactly.
Mr. RT, excuse me for just a moment, please. Mr. RT, there is a civility policy in place with this board meeting. The board is currently asking questions of Dr. Crowe.
Ma'am,
at this time, ma'am, they have asked your questions.
I got an idea.
If you
want to prove who's telling the truth, get the video security camera footage. It's going to show her lying. It's going to show I never come out of that room.
We are looking to remove you from the meeting, RT.
Of course, I'm the out of standard. I'm requesting to the board you get the video from the hospital, from that eighth floor. It'll show I never got out of that hospital room. I never got out of my bed. I didn't walk nowhere. It'll show it. And then you're going to know who's telling the truth. Videos don't lie.
Madam Chair, members of the board, if nobody has any other questions, and if you believe that Ms. Crowe, Mr. Giovanni, answered your question, perhaps you can go into deliberations.
How about you get the video? And that's self-explanatory.
And RT, with I'll defer to the board, but at this point, I think it may be helpful if he is not removed from the meeting, but is simply muted from participating any further. If any board member has
I'm the victim here. I damn near died. And if
he will then be given an opportunity to be unmuted so that he can answer your questions.
I've been trying to mute him the whole time, but he's got the ability to unmute himself.
Oh, is that okay? I'm sorry. I thought we were somehow doing that.
No, I was doing it.
It's obvious you're not going to do nothing because I'm the out of town. If you simply get the video from the hospital, you're going to catch the girl lying. You're going to catch her red-handed. If you want justice, that is. I don't know you people. I thank you for having this meeting, but you need to get the video from the hospital. If they still have it, it's going to show I didn't walk to no nurse's station. I didn't walk anywhere. I went into that room on eighth floor after I come out of recovery on the 11th and 30th of November, and I didn't leave that bed didn't leave that bed until they took me to 4 Northeast on Monday the 19th, and they took the whole bed and everything. I didn't even get out of bed because they knew I couldn't walk. They knew I had no use of my legs, my arm, and my hand, my right arm and hand. They knew it. Girls couldn't know.
RT, your medical records are showing other things up until the 18th.
I doubt that, honey, because I've got them all, and I've read everything.
We have them. And so okay. I need
now,
you
tell
to
you what, get hold of Dr. Huber. You can't get
I need you to listen.
I can't believe this. I am being bloody lied about.
We appreciate the level of anger.
Right,
and
I'm done. You guys are going to side with her because she lives in Arizona. Because you won't get the video from the hospital. You won't talk with Carol, the nurse that wrote the orders for Dr. Hubert. You won't talk to Dr. Hubert. You can't talk. Well, you could get a hold of Dr. Gilmartin, but she's in the state of California now at the University of California Medical Center in Irvine. She screwed up. She found me December the 21st at 7 in the morning. She wasn't supposed to find me. And that's when all the lies get started about. I'm walking around fourth floor, I'm chasing the nurses. I couldn't get out of bed. I was paralyzed. And that's a fact.
Okay. Mr. Harris,
Think
do you have a recommendation?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board. Ms. Crowe, thank you for your professionalism. RT.
Oh, God.
I think the board has heard. I think we're getting into areas that we're being redundant or just repeating
It's what you need to know, sir. You need to get the video and look at it. You're going to see I'm telling the truth and she's lying. If you want to make an honest decision, you look like an honest man.
RT.
I can't tell you how many people read over 2,000 pages. I did. RT,
if you continue to interrupt the board,
he needs intensive rehab. The board chair said it.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to you and the board, but at this point, I think he's been put on notice to modify his behavior, and he simply either refused.
Oh, really? My behavior? The hell with you people. I'm done with you. I'm not going to participate. This is kangaroo. I'm not going to participate in it. You've got.
Is there a way that you can remove him, Judy?
Yes.
Then if I need to make a motion to remove him from the meeting, I will make a motion to remove him from the meeting.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to remove complainant RT from the meeting. Dr. Bastier?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Thank you. He has moved.
Who did the second?
I did.
Thank you.
He has moved spots. Does anybody still see him in the meeting?
I think he voluntarily departed the meeting.
Okay.
Before you finalize your vote.
Thank you.
Dr. Crowe, I appreciate the level of thoroughness that you submitted your report in and your ability to articulate what you've been able to do. And everything we read, pages and pages of information. I don't know how the rest of the board feels, but my inclination is to move to dismiss.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No.
It's been moved and seconded to dismiss. Dr. Castillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
I'd like to take a short break, and then we can restart.
Okay, that sounds good. The board will recess at 10:31 for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. The board will recess for 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The recording will stop at 10:31 and the board will return again at 10:41.